Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka, where it's 45 degrees with intermittent light rain falling this morning. It's Monday, October 17th, 2011. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. Sea Alaska has lost some of its California casino land to foreclosure, but the regional native corporation says it won't hinder the project. Sea Alaska has been working for several years to build a $100 million-plus hotel and casino project about 85 miles north of San Francisco. Its partner is the Cloverdale Rancheria, a Pomo Indian group. It lost 2 acres to foreclosure last week. The corporation's vice president, Rick Harris, says it's a small part of a 65-acre project. A recent study showed it was not needed.
What we chose to do was try to negotiate a better price because the property wasn't going to be used for casino property. The individual that owned it was not interested in any further discussion, so we felt that it was not necessary for the project, and so we chose to let it go, and it just goes through the normal structured foreclosure process.
Sea Alaska bought the 2 acres for $1.3 million, according to the Santa Rosa Press Democrat. The newspaper reports the corporation owed just under $1 million when it defaulted on the land and it reverted to the previous owner. The Press Democrat, about 30 miles south of Cloverdale, has covered the casino extensively. Some residents strongly opposed the project, saying it would create too much traffic and change the town's character. Harris says any money lost in the foreclosure will ultimately be recovered.
We did invest some initial purchase price on the property, but it's included as part of the overall gaming project, and as Sea Alaska is repaid, you know, we'll recover our investment.
Sea Alaska's 2010 financial report, issued earlier this year, shows gaming operations losing more than $7 million during the previous 2 years. The same report also said the corporation moved to end some agreements with its tribal partners in Cloverdale, but Harris says the project continues.
We have agreements with the tribe to go forward with how to secure the financing for the project. And based upon that financing, that will help chart the course for the future.
The corporation earlier invested about $15 million in a San Diego area casino run by the San Pascual Indian Band. It made a sizable profit from that investment. Closer to home, Sea Alaska owns about 25,000 acres of subsurface mining rights in an area being contested by the city and borough of Juneau and Petersburg. The area includes Hobart Bay, where Juneau's native corporation Goldbelt owns 30,000 surface acres. Sea Alaska Vice President Rick Harris says the company will follow Goldbelt's lead in commenting on the dispute.
We'll support them in whatever way is necessary to achieve the a result that's best for Goldbelt shareholders. Of course, we're also our shareholders.
Juneau plans to file a competing petition to Petersburg's proposed borough boundaries, which include land previously slated for annexation to the CBJ. So far, Goldbelt hasn't expressed a preference for which borough, if any, the corporation's land should be in. Earlier this month, Goldbelt Vice President Derek Duncan sent a letter to the state's local boundary commission saying it would make a statement in the near future. Harris says sand, rock, and gravel are quite prevalent in Hobart Bay and that some precious metals are nearby.
We don't believe that it's on our property. We think that probably if there's any precious metals, they're actually to the north of our property.
October 26th is the deadline to submit competing petitions and opposing briefs to the state's local boundary commission on Petersburg's proposed borough. The CBJ Assembly plans to introduce an ordinance today to make its petition official. A bipartisan group of U.S. senators wants to extend the expiring Secure Rural Schools program for another 5 years. The annual payments have provided hundreds of millions of dollars for school districts and national forests around the country, including schools throughout Southeast Alaska. Matt Lichtenstein reports.
Congress originally passed the Secure Rural Schools Act in 2000. Using money from the Treasury, it increased and stabilized the forest receipt payments that had once depended on federal revenue from timber sales and other economic activity on national forest lands. That revenue declined substantially with the decline in the timber industry. The Senate's proposed 5-year extension for Secure Schools also includes funding for payment in lieu of taxes through 2017. PILT is a separate program that compensates local governments for the fact that they can't tax federal property within their boundaries. Alaska Republican Lisa Murkowski is co-sponsoring the measure along with several other senators, both Democrats and Republicans.
We recognize that there is an obligation that is out there, so while we're wrestling with budgets and how we find ways to pay for the obligations, I think the recognition here on a bipartisan basis is this is an obligation of the federal government. Let's figure out how we're going to meet that obligation.
Reauthorizing secure rural schools could be a tough sell to other lawmakers who say they want to slash spending, especially those lawmakers whose states don't benefit from the program. According to Murkowski, that's part of the reason sponsors included PILT in the mix.
Certain parts of the country just don't understand the rationale behind the Secure Rural Schools funding because they don't have timber-dependent areas, areas that are held in U.S. Forest Service status. They can't relate to that. Well, they can relate to PILT monies because they have military reservations in their state. They have areas that are under federal ownership.
The measure is positive news to school officials in Alaska who've been bracing for the complete loss of secure rural schools funding next year. Rob Thomason is school superintendent for Petersburg, which has received well over $1 million a year from the program.
I just think it's a great move forward for the stability of the program that a lot of our school districts in Southeast have, Wrangell and Cake and all of us that receive those funds. It's important.
The Senate bill would ratchet down funding 5% a year, and it would start at a lower level of annual funding than advocates had hoped. For instance, according to Senate estimates, Alaska's payments in 2012 would total roughly $18 million. That's nearly $7 million less than the peak payment year for secure rural schools in 2009. Sitka School Board President Lon Garrison says it's basically a compromise, and it's better than nothing.
So far, it looks like what they're talking about is that if this goes forward, there would be very little likelihood that there would be anything after that 5 years. So it's kind of the end of an era, so to speak. I guess what troubles us a little bit about it is whether or not we can really see some movement in terms of management on the national forest that would produce revenue that would come to communities.
Garrison is on the board of the National Forest and County Schools Coalition, which has voiced support for restoring the link to revenues from logging and other economic activity. The House Natural Resources Committee has been considering a proposal that would do that. As proposed in draft language last month, the House measure would require the Secretary of Agriculture generate a predetermined amount of revenue for secure rural schools each year through timber sales, mining, hydropower, recreation, and other projects. Language in the House measure would also supersede existing environmental laws, and environmental advocates have criticized it as impractical and unsustainable. The Senate's Treasury-funded measure, meanwhile, has not yet been scheduled for a hearing. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is warning waterfowl hunters to be safe after a report of someone firing shots toward the runway at the Juneau Airport. Area management biologist Ryan Scott says the hunters were allegedly not on the nearby Mendenhall Wetlands State Game Refuge.
A couple of things there. One, it's obviously not very safe to be shooting that direction. Two, during the waterfowl season, waterfowl hunters can use a shotgun to hunt ducks and geese on the refuge, but you've got to be on the refuge.
Scott says the incident is under investigation. He's not aware of any pending charges at this point. The waterfowl hunting season stretches from mid-September to the end of the year. Since 2003, Scott says the department has required a permit to hunt on the Mendenhall Refuge.
The purpose of that permit was so we could have some time with the hunter, explain some of the issues and concerns out there, and then provide them the information to make sure folks make good decisions out there. I would say 99.9% of the waterfowl hunters utilizing the refuge use very good, safe hunting practices, but it could just take, you know, a couple things, and it could really reflect negatively on everybody.
Scott says about 300 people apply for permits every year, making it one of the most popular hunts in Juneau. The U.S. House Natural Resources Committee is holding a hearing in Seattle today on the recovery of the Steller sea lion in Alaska waters. The committee, headed by Washington Congressman Doc Hastings and including Alaska Congressman Don Young, is looking at whether science supports cod and mackerel fishery restrictions in the Bering Sea and Gulf of Alaska. The Steller sea lion has been on the endangered species list since 1990. An adolescent mental health treatment center to serve Southeast Alaska is getting serious consideration by officials at Juneau's Bartlett Regional Hospital. Chief Executive Officer Sean Morrow says that construction could begin in 2013 if additional money is secured. A feasibility study concluded that 275 children and adolescents age 5 to 19 would need up to 4,125 days of intensive inpatient psychiatric care. The study says that means a need for 9 to 13 beds. Bartlett officials say the facility would need a gymnasium, a classroom, rooms for conferences and therapy, and an outdoor activity area. The cost is roughly estimated at $23 million. The hospital board reserved $5 million for the project last year and plans to do so again this fiscal year. Japan Airlines will double its flights to Fairbanks this winter to 18, which could mean another 1,300 visitors seeking a view of northern lights outside the interior Alaska city. The flights will originate from cities such as Osaka, Tokyo, Nagoya, Hiroshima, and Fukuoka. Fairbanks Convention and Visitors Bureau President Deb Hickok says a trip to view the aurora is a long-held desire for many Japanese people. She says Visitors Bureau staff attended trade shows twice this summer in Japan to promote Fairbanks visits. That's going to do it for news for this hour. The zone weather forecast today for Sitka and PA: expect rain, highs around 50. East winds 25 miles per hour, decreasing to 10 to 20 miles per hour in the late morning. Tonight, low temperatures around 43 with rain. Southeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour, increasing to 25 miles per hour late. And tomorrow, Alaska Day rain, highs around 51. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka.